This is The Guardian.
Today, a pivotal week for Joe Biden as he seeks to prove he's not too old and frail to run for president. It's a big week for Joe Biden, the 81-year-old with the biggest job in the world. He's welcoming international leaders to a major NATO summit in Washington, marking 75 years of the alliance. He's in the spotlight on the global stage at a very difficult time for him at home, where he's facing calls from senior Democrats and donors to withdraw from the presidential race.
So the main event for Biden this week is going to come on Thursday when he holds a NATO press conference. And that will be his first really big opportunity to show that he is up to the task of leading the nation for another 4 years. And I think specifically that he can answer questions in an unscripted format in a way that is both very coherent and robust, because that is something that people are deeply concerned about right now.
For months, Joan Grieve, a senior political reporter for Guardian US, has been watching every move of the increasingly beleaguered president.
One problem that Biden has had in recent months that could come back to haunt him during this NATO conference is that he has occasionally seemed to mix up the names of NATO leaders.
I sat down and I said, America's back. And Mitterrand from France looked at me and said, you know, how long are you back for?
At times, he has referred to leaders from long in the past, even as if they are leading nations like France and Germany today. And that has been really concerning for not just Americans, but even citizens around the world, because, of course, America plays a large role in global affairs. And if the president of the United States can't keep leaders' names straight, then it doesn't instill a lot of confidence about how he is going to lead the country in the years to come as he pitches himself for a second term.
With less than 4 months until Americans go to the poll to decide whether to re-elect Donald Trump for a second term, is Biden really the best candidate to beat him? From The Guardian, I'm Helen Pidd. Today in Focus, the Democrats' dilemma. Stick or twist with Joe Biden. Joan, let's rewind almost 2 weeks to the first head-to-head debate that Joe Biden had with Donald Trump. And for anybody that didn't watch it potentially through their fingers, can you talk us through why it went so badly for Joe Biden?
Yes. So the debate was really an opportunity for Biden to demonstrate his competence and clarity to American voters. When voters are asked about their biggest concerns regarding Biden, they often cite his age and his potential fitness for office for a second term as their main concerns. As a reminder, Biden right now is 81 years old. If he is elected to a second term, he will be 86 when he finishes his second term. And that is really concerning to a lot of Americans who feel like he is just not up for serving another 4 years in office. So the debate was really an opportunity for him to address those concerns and put them to rest. And he did not do that, to put it mildly.
The total initiative relative to what we're going to do with more Border Patrol and more asylum officers.
President Trump?
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either. Look,
he offered a lot of answers that were very garbled and kind of incoherent. He often seemed to kind of wander off in his point.
Making sure that we're able to make every single solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do dealing with everything we have to do with, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden, President Trump.
So the immediate reaction to the debate was not good, to put it mildly.
That was painful. I love Joe Biden. I work for Joe Biden. He didn't do well at all. He did not do well at all.
I mean, what was the reaction from pundits and polls in the immediate aftermath of that disastrous debate performance?
So I think that immediately after the debate, there were some pundits, including longtime Democratic advisors, who came out immediately and pretty much said, Biden needs to get out of the race. David Axelrod, a former Obama advisor, was one of the most vocal critics who seemed to be indicating that Biden should get out of the race.
Just, there are certain immutable facts of life, and those were painfully obvious on that debate stage. And the president just doesn't seem to come to, he hasn't come to grips with it. He's not winning this race. It's more likely that he'll lose by a landslide than win narrowly this race. And if the stakes are as large as he says, and I believe they are, then he really needs to consider what the right thing to do here is.
And when we started to get polls after the debate, it did seem like Trump was gaining ground nationally among voters who expressed deep concerns about Biden after the debate. There were some polls released by the New York Times and Wall Street Journal that showed Trump's lead nationally over Biden growing to 6 points. So those polls and the pundits saying that Biden needs to consider getting out, it seemed to deepen the panic among Democrats in Washington that they may be forced to abandon their presumptive nominee with just a month to go before the convention.
How did the situation for Biden continue to spiral in the days after that debate?
So I think in the days after the debate, Biden really had an opportunity to try to immediately, you know, go out on the campaign trail and give a lot of interviews and try to sort of do some damage control. And he did a little bit of that, but not much. You know, he gave a rally the following day in North Carolina.
Thank you, North Carolina.
Where he appeared very strong. Granted, he was reading off a teleprompter, which concerned some folks, but he was speaking much more clearly, much more strongly, and the crowd was really on his side. But he wasn't giving a ton of interviews where he was asked questions in an unscripted manner, where he could address his debate concern. And it just felt like, in general, he wasn't doing enough to rebut the conventional wisdom after the debate, which was that he had performed very weakly and should consider ending his campaign.
Barack Obama weighed in, didn't he? He tweeted, "Bad debate nights happen. Trust me, I know. But this election is still a choice between someone who's fought for ordinary folks his entire life and someone who only cares about himself." How did his close allies explain his poor performance?
I would say it was a bit of a mixed reaction. You know, we saw some of his campaign surrogates kind of going out and doing interviews where they were saying that they still really believe in Joe Biden and they trust his leadership, and they cited his legislative accomplishments as, you know, as evidence that he was fit to serve a second term. But we also saw some leaders, including Nancy Pelosi, the former Democratic House Speaker, show a certain amount of, I would say, hesitation when it came to offering a full-throated endorsement of Biden.
Now, again, I think it's a legitimate question to say, is this an episode or is this a condition? And so when people ask that question, it's completely legitimate.
And so we saw that it seemed like they weren't totally sure how to proceed in the days after the debate, because, of course, their number one concern is defeating Donald Trump in November. And I think it's an open question among many of them, even now that we're a week and a half out of the debate, of is Biden our best chance to defeat Trump in November?
And we all know that money talks when it comes to U.S. presidential races. Are the donors keeping the faith? Because I guess if they start withdrawing their cash, I mean, would Biden then be in real trouble? Has that started to happen yet?
We are seeing some major Democratic donors voice serious concerns about Biden's candidacy and even threatening to withhold their financial support from his presidential campaign. Among those who are voicing those concerns is Abigail Disney, who's a member of the Disney family and is an heir to the family fortune, and Reed Hastings, who is the co-founder of Netflix. That being said, you know, after Biden's really detrimental debate performance about a week and a half ago, Biden's campaign actually saw its strongest fundraising hour in the hour after the debate, which seems kind of astounding, you know, as a viewer of the debate. But I think it shows that, you know, grassroots Democrats are, I would say, they're pretty terrified of the idea of Trump returning to office.
Last week, he gave his first major interview since the debate to ABC anchor George Stephanopoulos. How big a deal was that, and how did it go for him?
It was a very big deal because it was his first major opportunity on a national stage to address and quiet the concerns about his fitness for office that were raised after the debate. In terms of his performance, I would say he did not succeed at completely silencing the criticism of his candidacy. And in some respects, he actually made it a bit louder. I think his most damaging answer came when he was asked about the potential ramifications of Trump winning in November. Basically, Biden said something along the lines of, well, as long as I know that I gave it my best shot to defeat him, then that's what matters.
And if you stay in and Trump is elected and everything you're warning about comes to pass, how will you feel in January?
I feel as long as I gave it my all and I did the goodest job as I know I can do. That's what this is about.
And I think that really alarmed a lot of Democrats because in Democrats' mind, Trump's potential second term represents a fundamental threat to American democracy. They believe that key institutions of a U.S. government will not be able to continue if Trump is reelected. And so they were not, to put it mildly, they were not reassured when Biden said, well, all I have to do is give it my all.
Yeah, I tried my best. That's the kind of thing you tell your parents, you know, after a spelling test or right. a sports day. Yikes. And there was another line in that interview that really stuck out for me when he said that the only person who would get him to drop out of the race was the Lord Almighty.
That's correct. Yeah.
I mean, if the Lord Almighty came out and said, Joe, get out of the race, I'll get out of the race. The Lord Almighty's not coming down.
What do you make of that? And is that true in practical terms that only God could take him out of the race?
I think only God or Jill Biden, who are probably one and the same in Joe Biden's mind. But in all honesty, I think that we have seen in recent days that he seems to be really digging in his heels and insisting that he is going to stay. On Monday morning, he sent a letter to congressional Democrats saying that he is absolutely staying in the race. And basically, he said in no uncertain terms, like, you need to cut it out, basically. He reminded them that there is limited time between now and November to defeat Donald Trump. And he said that that needs to be their single-minded focus.
So he wrote that letter on Monday, and didn't he also phone in a TV show? I always think it's mad when US presidents do that. It seems a bit desperate or weird. Feels like it wouldn't necessarily happen in the UK. What did he say when he called MSNBC?
Yes, so you're right. He called into Morning Joe, an MSNBC show, on Monday.
The bottom line here is that we're not going anywhere. I am not going anywhere. I wouldn't be running if I didn't absolutely believe that I am the best candidate to beat Donald Trump in 2024.
He was trying to project a lot of strength and confidence that he has the fitness and acuity to continue forward in the race. But I agree that the practice of presidents calling into morning shows is a bit odd. I think that was a standard that was set by former President Trump, and apparently it's here to stay.
And yeah, I think people might be surprised to learn that Biden isn't actually officially the Democratic nominee yet, is he?
That's right. He is not officially the nominee yet. He is considered the presumptive nominee at this point. And what that means is that because all of the voting in presidential primaries at the state level is now over, he has won far more than enough delegates to become the nominee at the convention next month in Chicago. So as of now, Biden is not yet officially the nominee. And that makes it a little bit easier for Democrats to choose another nominee if that's what they're going to do.
And so this big meeting in Chicago at the end of August, would that normally then be just a rubber stamping exercise? The delegates would turn up and they would vote for Biden as they kind of promised to do. And what's to stop them just turning up and saying, actually, I've changed my mind. I don't think you're the guy for the job. Can they do that?
It's a great question. So the rules for the convention are somewhat complicated, to put it mildly. But as of now, there are roughly 4,000 so-called pledged delegates going to the Democratic convention. So of the 4,000 pledged delegates who are going to the convention, about 3,900 of them have pledged their support to Biden. Now, if Biden remains the race and if he does insist that he is going to continue his candidacy, there isn't really an easy mechanism for those pledged delegates to separate themselves from Biden because they are really tethered to him and to his campaign. And so as long as he remains in the race, they go to Chicago pretty much binded to him and needing to pledge their support to him. But that being said, if he does drop out of the race, then it does get much more complicated because those 3,900 delegates who make up the vast majority of all the delegates are all of a sudden up for grabs. And so it could be a complete mess. And that's not necessarily the image that you want to project of your party when you are at that point nearly 3 months out from the convention. So if Biden does indeed step aside, it could become chaos.
Right. Okay. So as long as Biden refuses to step aside, there is no clear mechanism for those delegates to ditch him and choose somebody else. That's tricky.
Yes. So I think that's why there is a lot of public pressure on Biden to step aside, because there isn't really a mechanism by which they can force him to step aside. You know, the public pressure campaign is really their most effective lever that they can pull. And so if he chooses not to do that, then that's kind of the ballgame. You know, that's the he will become the nominee and he will be on the ballot in November.
And who would he listen to? Who's actually got his ear?
I think his family, specifically First Lady Jill Biden, I think that if they started to indicate that he should step aside, I think that that would be a real game changer for him. So far, you know, we have seen no public indication that any of his family members are telling him that he needs to step aside. That being said, I think that if we saw a kind of collective show of force from congressional Democratic leaders saying that they wanted him to step aside, then that, I think, would fundamentally change the calculus. But we're not seeing that yet. And I think this week will be very telling to determine if we are going to see a show of force like that.
If he does drop out, would the nomination automatically fall to the vice president, Kamala Harris?
It would not automatically fall to Harris. That being said, it does seem like she is the clear favorite at this point because she is Biden's vice president. She does have the largest national profile of any potential candidate. And because she appeared on the ballot with Biden in 2020, I think it is reassuring to people to know that people did vote for her in some fashion, because that's where it gets complicated, right? All of the voting in states for presidential primaries is over at this point. So the Democratic Party, its members who consistently vote in primaries, they're not going to have a say in who becomes the nominee if Biden steps aside. And I think that that is a big challenge for Democrats, is how do we navigate that situation in which millions of Democrats have already voted and they have said that they want Biden to be the nominee. And now Biden has stepped aside. So who do we get to replace him in a manner that seems consistent with our values, basically? Because remember, Democrats are pitching themselves as the party that's going to protect democracy.
But I keep reading that voters have real doubts about Harris. What is it about her that they don't trust or they don't like?
Yes. So Harris has had the unenviable task over the past several years that anytime that something, any major unsolvable problem sort of crops up in the Biden administration, she is sort of tasked with figuring it out. So what I mean by that is that Biden has given Harris the responsibility of addressing easy issues like immigration and voting rights and abortion access. And all these issues that like Democrats have not really been able to address on a national level because Republicans control the House currently. And even when Democrats control both chambers, they could not get a major voting rights or immigration legislation through both chambers of Congress. And so I feel like Harris's reputation has somewhat been damaged by the fact that she has been tasked with these very weighty issues that have proven over years to be really difficult to address. So I think that's one problem she faces. And then also, we should remember that Harris ran for president for the Democratic nomination in 2020. And that campaign went so badly that she ended up dropping out before voters even actually started voting in the primaries. So she does have some baggage as a candidate, absolutely, looking ahead to November. And also at the same time, any other potential nominee who Democrats might consider also doesn't have the national profile that Harris does, which means that if they were to be nominated at the convention in August, they have only 2.5 months at that point to introduce themselves to the American public and make a clear pitch for their candidacy and make a convincing argument that they are the better option over Donald Trump. And that is a really difficult task.
And who would be the front runners if not Harris?
Some of the names that have been thrown out are some of the Democratic governors of major states, including California Governor Gavin Newsom, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, just to name a few people. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, who ran for the Democratic nomination in 2020, has also been mentioned as a potential option. And so if we do get in a situation where we have a floor fight for the nomination at the convention, I think those are some of the names you'll see thrown out. But again, you know, if we find ourselves in the situation where Democrats are going to multiple ballots to determine their nominee, and they're having a pretty extensive, nasty floor fight for to determine who the nominee will be, I would say that does not bode well for them for November.
Coming up, with 4 months to go, how have Democrats allowed it to get to this point? Can you just help me understand, how have the Democrats allowed it to get to this point? It's entirely foreseeable that Joe Biden was going to age, and he was already old when he became the president. Is it deference for him as the incumbent? Is it that he's beaten Trump once before and therefore is best placed to win? What is it? Like, why have they allowed it to get to this point?
I think it's some of all of those factors. So yes, Biden is the incumbent, and there is a lot of deference for the incumbent. And also, he has proven that he can beat Trump in the past. Democrats also say that that Biden has achieved a lot in his first term in office. They cite things like the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act, which include a lot of provisions for healthcare and the climate crisis. So he has a pretty robust record to point to for to make an argument for a second term. But as you said, simultaneously, voters have been voicing concerns about his age for a long time now. And it seemed like if Democrats were going to have this argument about potentially replacing Biden on the ballot, it probably needed to happen a while ago. You know, this does not seem like the prime opportunity to be having that conversation when we are 6 weeks out from the Democratic convention and we are about 4 months out from Election Day. And so I think they needed to start the conversation far earlier than they did. And realistically, looking back, the time to start that conversation would have been after the midterm elections in November of 22. If you can recall, when we look back to that time, it was expected that Republicans were going to perform phenomenally well in the 22 midterms, and that they were going to basically take both chambers of Congress in a landslide. And that wasn't what we saw. Instead, Democrats actually picked up a seat in the Senate, and Republicans managed to take the slimmest of majorities in the House when they were expected to easily win a majority there. And so I think what happened was, because Democrats performed far better than expected, any potential talk of replacing Biden on the ballot for 24 somewhat got quieted in the months after the midterms. And so it sort of delayed the conversation of, should Biden be our nominee? Is he the best person for the job at this point in time? And now here we are in July of 24, we have less than 4 months to go until the election, and we're finally having the conversation of, should Biden be replaced?
Over the last couple of days, Biden has received support from some pretty high-profile Democrats, notably Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
The matter is closed. He had reiterated that this morning. He has reiterated that to the public. Joe Biden is our nominee. He is not leaving this race. He is in this race, and I support him. Now, what I think is critically important right now is that we focus on what it takes to win in November, because he is running against Donald Trump, who is a man with 34 felony convictions, 34 felony crimes, and not a single Republican has asked for Donald Trump to not be the nominee. I'm here to win on this democracy.
She made the argument that while the Democrats are busy bickering among themselves, they are at risk of losing sight of the real threat, which is the return to the White House of a man who tried to overturn the last election. And speaking of whom, this must be an absolute gift for Donald Trump. How is he exploiting this moment?
Yes. So I think one of the things that has sort of unnerved Democrats the most over the past week and a half since the debate is that Trump has been notably quiet, I would say, about the turmoil that is upending the Democratic Party. You know, and it gives the impression that he is just basically letting the Democratic Party light its hair on fire, and that he is taking the moment to really benefit from that. And also, I think that Trump has also been, I think, a little distracted by the fact that we also had a Supreme Court decision last week that had some really important implications for him. Essentially, the Supreme Court, in a 6-3 decision split between conservatives and liberals on the court, decided that presidents and former presidents, in the case of Donald Trump, have absolute immunity when it comes to official acts, and then have limited immunity in other cases. And that could really curtail the federal case against Donald Trump in regards to his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. And it has seemed like throughout the 2024 presidential campaign, Trump has often seemed more focused on his legal issues than he has on the actual day-to-day mechanics of the campaign. So I think some of it too is just that he is paying more attention to that Supreme Court case and what it will mean for his other criminal cases than he is to what is happening with Biden right now.
And what do you think that Joe Biden would need to do to convince the American public that he is the right guy and that he deserves another term and that he can be trusted to last the whole thing?
I think that in terms of this week, he needs to come out with a very strong performance at the NATO press conference. He needs to make it very clear that he can not only deliver a convincing speech about his leadership and America's role on the global stage, but he can also answer questions in an unscripted format in a clear and convincing manner. So that is the task for this week. And then if he can make it through this week, which, you know, it's wild that that's sort of how we're phrasing it, if his candidacy can make it through the next week, then in terms of the next several weeks and few months, he needs to really refocus the presidential race so it becomes a decision between him and Donald Trump. Something that political pundits have been saying for a while now is that if this election becomes about Joe Biden's candidacy and about his ability to serve a second term, then Biden will lose. But if the election becomes about the differences between Biden and Trump, then Biden could potentially win. So that's what he needs to do. He needs to refocus the race. He needs to ensure that it becomes, again, a conversation about who do you want to serve in office, Donald Trump or Biden, or realistically, a conversation about who do you want to serve in office, Trump or anybody else. I think that's kind of what we're going to see from Democrats over the next several weeks, is that their argument is just, we're not Trump, don't reelect Trump. And so if he can make that argument in a convincing manner over the next week and over the next several weeks and 4 months, then maybe he can eke out a win and serve a second term. But that remains to be seen.
Maybe. Well, we will watch with great interest. Joan, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
That was Joan Grieve. You can read all of her reporting from Washington at theguardian.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do leave us a review. It's not only good for our egos, but it really helps other people to find us. If you're interested in US politics, I highly recommend that you check out Guardian Weekly America, which is presented by my esteemed colleague Jonathan Friedland, and that drops every Friday. If you're more interested in the performance of England's football team, then do check out Football Weekly, where Max and guests will be analysing the team's performance after tonight's semi-final against the Netherlands. Today's episode was produced by Alex Atack and presented by me, Helen Pidd. Sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo, and the executive producer was Elizabeth Cassin. We will be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.